Talk to anyone who's enjoyed a measure of success, and they will tell you about the multiple failures that preceded their achievements. Much as we don't like it, some of the most character-building moments of our lives are forged in the crucible of failure. G'day, I'm Clayton Biel, and today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll continues his classic biographical series on the life of Moses, a man of selfless dedication. And in this next study, we'll find Moses at one of the lowest points in his celebrated tenure. Feeling like you've blown it? Chuck titled today's message, Lessons Learned from Failure.
Will you open your Bible to Psalm number 119? I want to speak on the subject, Lessons Learned from Failure. I think a message such as this is long overdue because we Christians are very product-oriented, and our product is always success. It is always victory. Unfortunately, we are guilty of presenting a fairy tale conversion that if you will receive Jesus Christ, you will live happily ever after. I have yet, in my years of knowing the Lord, to meet one Christian who has lived happily ever after receiving Jesus Christ. Nothing wrong with being product-oriented, and there's nothing wrong with success. But there is something wrong if we leave out the process, which includes times of defeat and failure. I don't know who it was that ever wrote it in the traditional record that a Christian is not to fail, but he was a liar. He was wrong. Do you know that there are many weeks where I feel I have spent more of the week missing the mark than hitting the mark? Ever had a week like that? I feel the vibrations already coming back saying, if you had a month, I could tell you about last week. Who says there's something wrong with a week where you fail several times? Who ever erected a standard of perfection in the first place? God knew we weren't able to produce perfection. That's why Jesus, the perfect Son of God, placed us into His family and gave us a position that is perfect, so that we might be reminded by contrast that our experience will constantly be imperfect. If you're waiting for the perfect week, friend, you're going to wait in vain. There is no such thing. And until we learn how to derive lessons from times of failure, we will spend a lot of our time increasingly more defeated. So tonight I want to talk about the whole area of failure. I want to talk about the process that leads to times of victory and success. The process is as important as the product. Now Psalm number 119, verse 67, along with verse 71, presents for us two basic principles regarding failure. Now, the psalmist uses the word affliction. We'll use the word failure. That's the subject of this evening. They are one and the same for the subject of tonight. Let me read the two verses using the word failure. Before I failed, that is, before I was afflicted, I went astray. Before I failed, I wandered, but now I keep thy word. Verse 71, it is good for me that I failed, and in the process was afflicted, that I may learn thy statutes. Now don't miss the thought here. The psalmist has been hurting for some period of time. He doesn't tell us what the hurt or pain was. He doesn't tell us how long it lasted. He just tells us it has happened. And after failing, he has gone through an afflicting experience. before God. Now, after it is all over, now that the failure has happened and the affliction has run its course, the psalmist looks back and says, there are two things I can say about failure. Here they are. First, verse 67. Experiencing failure promotes an obedient life. That's the first principle. When I go through times of failure, I am more than ever promoted to live in obedience. When I go through occasions of walking in the flesh and I come to the end of that ugly scene, oh, there is never a time in which I want to be pure more than then. You follow me? Times of failure bring me to a place of wanting to be obedient more than ever at any other time. Now, there's another principle. Verse 71. He says, it's good for me that I was afflicted, that I may learn. Principle number two. Experiencing failure prompts a teachable spirit. You know people that are listening closely to God tonight? They're people who have been broken and bruised. You know the sensitive heart tonight? They're the Christian that's hospitalized or is facing hospitalization. There are those of you here who bear the marks of a carnal weak, and you come desperately in need of learning from God. You see, the failure has given you a sensitive, teachable spirit. It's broken the pride barrier. The hardest thing for us to do is to face the fact that we have failed. Our tendency is to employ defense mechanisms, to deny it, to excuse it, to rationalize around it, to reinterpret it. Call it what it is. It was a failure. It was wrong. Now, having declared it, learn what God has to teach you from it. It was Winston Churchill, in the midst of the Nazi bombings, who said to the people of London, "This is not the end. It is not even the beginning of the end, but it is perhaps the end of the beginning." I like that very much. We have come through a time of failure. This isn't the end. It is not even the beginning of the end, but it is perhaps the end of the beginning. What do I mean by that? I mean that as you begin to interpret failure correctly, you will take your first giant step toward maturity. You will come to the end of the beginning, few steps of the Christian life. Now, the personification of this whole story is, of course, Moses, who is the man of the hour these days. And I want you to turn to a man who failed, and he failed royally. Old Mayor LaGuardia of New York, those of the other generation will remember that name, used to say, "I don't fail often, but when I do, it's a beaut." Maybe that's the way you feel. Preacher, I don't fail often, but boy, when I do, it is a royal flop. Well, wonderful. That's great. Because royal flops lead to royal lessons that can be learned. If you fail only slightly, you'll get only a slight lesson. But if the bottom drops out and you fall 40 stories, that's when you begin to learn. It isn't the fall that hurts, it's the sudden stop at the bottom of those 40 stories that give you trouble. Moses is at the bottom of the well, as it were. The most crucial moment in his 40 years on earth. I know just how he feels. I've come through a very difficult week. A couple of most unique kinds of pressures led me to a hard week that's now past. And I sort of was licking my wounds last night as I was thinking over tonight's message, and I thought, thanks, Lord, I needed that. As I look over what I'm going to be saying, I'm really saying it for my own benefit as well as for some of you that want to listen in to the testimony of this failure. Moses, verse 15, sat down by a well. Exodus 2:15, the last few words. The lowest moment of his life, you know how he felt. You perhaps have felt like that this past week. You sit down and you feel, what a waste. You feel, I'll never be useful. Or, God's through with me. Or, why? Not again. Here I am again. Had those feelings lately? I feel like I'm an advertisement for the pill Compose right now. You know, just a simple pill is what you need. No, you don't need a pill. You need to learn. You need to look back. I think Moses looked into the reflection in that deep well, that hot evening, and he learned four lessons from his past. Let me give them to you. We'll just sort of survey where we were last week. Then we'll wrap it up with some changes that God brought about in his life. The first lesson that he learned, spiritual ends are never achieved by carnal means. Spiritual results never take place through carnal means. Where had Moses acted in the flesh? Well, look back up at verse 11. It says, in those days when Moses had grown up, he went out to his brethren and looked on their hard labors. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way. And when he saw there was no one around, remember, he forgot to look up. He never prayed. He stepped into the scene and, in fact, he murdered that man and hid him in a fresh grave. That's the first act of the flesh. You cannot sow a carnal seed and reap a spiritual plant. You cannot sow a carnal act and reap spiritual fruit. If you manipulate and connive and scheme and lie to get yourself to the top, don't thank God for the promotion. God knows, as you know, that you manipulated and schemed and buried those carnal carcasses in the soil to get yourself promoted. So when you get there, don't give him the credit. I think at times we must say to the Lord, thanks, Father, for that. And the Lord must answer back, who, me? I didn't pull that off. You pull that off. You cheat on an exam and make a good grade, don't thank God for the A. You planted a carnal seed in the crib sheet. You lie on your income tax and you get money back, don't thank him for the extra cash you can give to the building fund. It doesn't work, friend. He says to you, that's a carnal end. Don't thank me, Moses, that Egyptian is in the soil. You did that. And it will never result in spiritual ends. It's carnal, Moses, from start to finish. And you know it. I think he learned that lesson. And then when he moved back into the scene the next day and tried to take up the leadership and nobody followed him, all of a sudden everything began to pour in on him and he just worked harder to keep it afloat and it wouldn't float. And Moses sat down by the well that afternoon and he learned that you cannot produce spiritual ends by carnal means. Stop trying to do it. For the first time, I think he learned that. There's another lesson he learned. He learned that timing is as important as action. Timing is just as important as action. Sometimes, frankly, I think it's more important. You know that you can do the right thing at the wrong time and it'll blow up in your face? I've had that happen so many times, I'm just embarrassed to think back over it. God not only plans what we are to do, He has the right time for it. And Moses looked back and he could write over the entire experience premature. He jumped into that scene, he jumped into leadership, he pushed his way in, he forced his way, and it didn't work. And he looked back and he realized, you know, I have now discovered that the timing of my act was as important as the act itself might have been. You know, I'm beginning to live by a formula that is rather simple. I want to pass it on to you so that I can keep you from stumping your toe as often as I've stumped mine. Here's the formula. When God is in it, it flows. When the flesh is in it, it's forced. Think that through. If you think that in order to pull this off, you better force it through, you better back off. When God is in something, it flows. If you want to engage yourself in a ministry of some kind, in your work, let's say, perhaps at the lunch hour, you want to provide an opportunity for fellows and gals to get together around the scriptures and maybe spend 10 or 15 minutes with their lunch in the Word. Don't force that. Lay it before God and let Him open the doors. If He is in it, it is remarkable how the timing will take place and you will just move through one moment after the other. It will just flow. Timing is as important as an action. I think that's where wisdom comes in. Knowledge tells me what to do. Wisdom tells me when to do it. Wisdom tells me how to carry it out. The longer I live, the more I believe the words of the wise sage who wrote, "One blow struck when the time is right is worth 1,000 struck in premature eagerness." God is very able to pull something off, but He's going to do it in His time and not before. Don't you feel like at times He's awfully slow? Don't you have that feeling? Man, you know, get with it up there. It's the feeling you have. Wake up! I've been talking to you for weeks. You know, the problem is not that God's slow. It's that we're too fast. That's the problem. He's not slow. You ever seen a dog that's untrained on a leash? You ever seen one? Well, what's the trouble? Is the fellow that's holding him walking too slow, or is the dog running too fast? Which is it? It's a rather meat and potatoes kind of illustration you can chew on for a few minutes. Well, obviously, the dog's going crazy down. He's wearing all the stuff off his little hoofs, trying to, you know, get down the sidewalk, and the owner keeps, slow down, stop, stop, kicks him and, you know, wants to bite him and everything. There's a dog that I don't know whose it is, but every morning it comes around our neighborhood, and you can always tell he's coming because his feet are slipping. Spends all his time just slipping his feet. This guy that's, you know, leading him, you know, he's got him on the leash, and the dog just craning at the neck. The collar's about to choke him. And I thought the other morning, as I was out to get the morning paper, that's just like me, you know, just like the Christian, pulling at the leash, and God says, "Come on back." Timing is as important as the action. Stop running. Slow down. Moses was too strong. He had to discover out of weakness, one becomes strong. He had to learn that waiting was not a sign of weakness, but a sign of strength. Some of you haven't learned that. And so you're spinning your gears, working up all kinds of anxiety dust inside because that won't happen fast. I got news for you. It never will. It never will. Lesson number three that Moses learned, hiding wrong doesn't erase wrong. It only postpones its discovery. He had hid that Egyptian in the sand, verse 12. But you know what? They found that Egyptian. And they knew that he had hid him in the sand. Hiding wrong doesn't erase wrong. I am convinced from that moment on, Moses learned he would no longer hide anything. He would be transparent. He would no longer hide. You know, the most Adamic muscle in all of us is the hiding muscle. It goes all the way back to Adam and his partner in crime. After they had sinned, they covered themselves up with loincloth and they with fig leaves. And as soon as God came to walk with them in the garden in the cool of the evening, where was Adam? He was hiding. Shortly thereafter, they gave birth to a boy named Cain, who killed his brother Abel. What did he do with Abel? He hid him. Just like his father, we've been hiding ever since. We've been hiding the consequences of the flesh. We hide from ourselves the truth about ourselves. We hide from others the truth about ourselves. We don't want to be found out, so we hide that part. Like Mark Twain has put it, we're all like the moon. We have a dark side we don't want anybody to see. Why not? Why? Because we have to succeed. Says who? I think at times it would be delightful to have a testimony time and sharing failures. Wouldn't that be different? Ever been to testimony meetings where everybody was on cloud 39 and you were on tunnel number 7? And man, everybody was talking about soaring in the heavenlies and man, you're down in the gutter. I think at times, hey, let's see the other side, friend. Tell me when you nosedive. Tell me about that experience. Oh, we hide that. We don't want anybody to see that. Why not? Because we are proud. Because we are dishonest, basically, in the heart. We are afraid to say, oh, wow, I had a miserable week. And as a result, my friend, we don't know how to handle failure. When we fail, we look upon it as though we think God looks upon it. God doesn't change. When we fail and say, oh, Father, I failed. I failed terribly. Look at what I've done. A father comes just like your loving father would come and say, honey, I accept you just like you are. I acknowledge that that was wrong as you've acknowledged it. Now let's move on. Some of the most tender experiences of my life as a father have come when my children have honestly said to me, Daddy, I want to tell you what I did that was wrong. Some of the most touching, moving experiences have come at times like that. Some of the hardest times of a father's life comes when the child won't admit it and covers it up. You never find Moses covering up from this time on. He learned that lesson from failure. Here's a fourth lesson. First lesson, spiritual ends never achieved by carnal means. Timing is as important as action. Hiding wrong doesn't erase wrong. Fourth lesson, spiritual leadership is God-appointed, not self-assumed. Spiritual leadership is God-appointed, not self-assumed.
Moses learned these four lessons from his own failures, and there's much more Chuck Swindoll wants to show us, so we do urge you to keep listening to Insight for Living. Chuck titled today's presentation, Lessons Learned from Failure. If you're ready to learn more from the life of Moses, we do invite you to encounter the Bible on your own. At Insight for Living, we believe that sometimes your best times reflecting on the Bible are apart from this program, When you get a quiet moment to yourself, it's just you and your Bible, well, perhaps a cup of coffee too. And to ignite your imagination and help you dig deeper on your own, Chuck Swindoll asked his creative team to help him produce a resource that we call our Searching the Scriptures Bible Studies. It's a workbook or a journal of sorts that's spiral-bound and lays flat on the table or on your lap. And with this Bible study workbook, you're invited to follow the same method Chuck uses for preparing these lessons on Moses. We'd love to send you the Searching the Scriptures Bible Study workbook for Moses today. To request a copy, head to ifl.org.au. I'm Clayton Bjellin, inviting you to join us when Chuck Swindoll continues his message called Lessons Learned from Failure, Friday on Insight for Living.